Do you know the number one thing that surprises engaged couples? Take a guess. The sheer amount of decisions they have to make while planning a wedding. Indoors or outdoors? How many guests? Are kids invited? Controversial. Which cake flavor? Seriously, how do you even begin to figure out what's right for you? That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to make every wedding decision a piece of cake, from choosing your dream wedding venue and vendors to deciding how to best spend your budget. With tons of customizable wedding websites, save the dates and invites, every detail will feel like you. Zola will even help you choose the gifts, experiences, and cash funds you really want. The next thing you know, you've planned your whole wedding all in one place. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Chad Hartman has a day off. I'm Dave Schrader, sitting in for the remainder of the program. You can tune in and check me out every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Central, with the Paranormal 360. Right now, I want to talk about the new Nosferatu movie that just came out Christmas Day. Again, not a day I would think would be popular for horror movies, and especially one with such a gothic nature, but I wanted to chat with a friend of mine. Cameron Pasha is a Hollywood filmmaker. He's a novelist. He has worked as a writer and producer on TV shows like Sleeper Cell on Showtime, as well as Nikita, Rain, and Roswell, New Mexico on the CW. He's here to join me this afternoon. Thank you so much for being here, buddy.
It's always great to be on with you, Dave.
Yeah, nice chatting with you. So, Nosferatu, obviously, this is an interesting concept. They've tried to remake it a few times, and I feel that they've kind of lost something, some of the magic to it. I went in with kind of low expectations, and I really liked it. What did you think of the new version of Nosferatu?
Well, I mean, this is a Robert Eggers film, and Robert is really a brilliant filmmaker. He's able to bring atmosphere to all of his movies. That includes The Witch, that includes The Northman, and he brings it here, which is the core of what made the original 1922 silent film Nosferatu work, was this incredibly menacing atmosphere. And that is what Robert Eggers really does homage to here. It's a wonderful film.
Now, you know, the only bone of contention I had, it lagged a little bit for me. I almost felt like it could have been about 15 to 20 minutes shorter. But saying that, I can't think of what I would have punched out of that, because so much of it is in developing good characters that you care about, and even giving kind of an interesting insight to the vampire himself, Count Orlok. And he leans into the weird look of the original, but also has his own take on the way that this villain is represented. Bill Skarsgård, who is now, I guess, the horror movie go-to guy, right? He was Pennywise in It. He was in The Crow. And now he is Nosferatu, Count Orlok. And his voice and presence is so terrifying, and he does so much with so little in this movie. I was blown away by his moving and acting portrayal as well.
Well, what Bill is trying to do there is he's very much trying to honor, this whole movie is honoring the F.W. Murnau film from 22, and he's trying to do that in his performance, because he's trying to honor the incredible performance of Max Schreck, who was the German actor who played the original vampire, and still is absolutely terrifying. If you watch it, you can get it on YouTube, watch the film. He's absolutely mesmerizing, terrifying. But they, as you said, they took it differently. He wanted to let that film stand on its own. And so the vampire looks a little different here. What's interesting, as you notice, is that it has this sort of bushy mustache, right? Which the people are like, oh, that's interesting. But that's actually a direct homage to the original Bram Stoker's Dracula, which most people don't realize. Dracula is described as having a mustache because Vlad Dracul was famous for his very nice mustache, right?
And that's right.
And you haven't really seen that even in the Bram Stoker's Dracula that Francis Ford Coppola did. The vampire, you see him as a mustache when he looks human, but they remove it because they think it won't add to the creepiness of him as a vampire. But it absolutely adds to the creepiness of Skarsgård as a vampire here.
I agree. The acting in this is well done. This movie, I think, really does a much better job than the Bram Stoker Dracula movie that had Keanu Reeves and Gary mm-hmm. Oldman. That one fell short for me. It was so long and languishing. The sets were gorgeous. The acting was fine, but it just felt like it took so long to create something that Eggers really locked into with Nosferatu. And for people that are not familiar, can you kind of explain the difference between Dracula and Nosferatu, the movie background of this for people?
So the F.W. Murnau, who was a German director in the 20s in the silent film era, he wanted to make a version of Dracula, which, you know, I don't believe that any film version had been done at that time. And, you know, he couldn't get permission from the estate of Bram Stoker. I believe his wife was still alive in the 20s. And so he said, well, you know, I'm a creative director. I'm just going to make a movie about a vampire. And then he makes this other movie that's not set in Victorian England. It's set in the 1830s of Germany. And he goes off and does it. What actually happened is, because it's still hews very similar to the Dracula plot from Stoker, Stoker's wife sued him. She sued him, and she won. She sued him for copyright violation, and she won, and the court actually ordered the destruction of Nosferatu. So all copies of it were destroyed under legal order, and then it was considered a lost silent film that only historians mentioned existed. And then in the 1970s, someone found the one canister that had been forgotten in some studio closet that was still around. And so as a result, the movie was then revealed to the world. And people were like, this is a work of utter genius. How could this have been lost for all these years?
Oh, it was never lost. They put it away knowing that they were going to just wait out that copyright law, and then it would become public domain and they'd get it back out there. And I'm glad they did, because it is. It's a classic movie. And again, it's doing so much with so little. And I love the fact, and help me, Cameron, because maybe I was just so enthralled with this movie. This is a vampire movie. This is Dracula movie. You think of these, and there's always so much special effects. This seemed like it was strictly, what do they call it when it's not CGI? It's practical effects.
It's practical effects.
Right.
And, you know, both the original film and what Eggers does in this one is really cinematography.
Right.
That's you know, he honors it because Eggers has access to all the modern, FX stuff, and he doesn't use much of it. He uses a lot of cinematography. He actually really does homages to the shadows, which is what Murnau did. He used shadow to create menace, which is what Eggers does as well.
And in the original, of course, being a silent movie, there was no vocal to go with this. Yep. The way that the have Bill Skarsgård speaking, the intonation, the mm-hmm. voice is so freaky and chilling. They nailed it. I love this version. But it also helps reawaken that concept that at the heart of it, it's really kind of a love story.
Well, absolutely. And that's what the original Dracula was as well. It was about Mina. But what's interesting about it actually goes back to what you said earlier, Dave, which is that this movie has this longer period. I mean, because you develop character, because a silent film, there's a lot of mystery. You don't really know much about Count Orlok. You don't know why he's obsessed with a girl in the movie, right? Whereas in this film, you get the sense that there's some kind of cosmic destiny between them, and that's through the character work that we do in the long periods of this film.
Let's do this. We're going to take just a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Cameron. I want to talk about the ban on Wicked movie that a couple of people are seeing as a potentiality here in the next few years. And I'd love to hear from you, the listeners, on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line 651-461-9226. Horror for the holidays? Do you like that they're releasing horror movies around Christmas? Seems October's kind of light where it comes to horror movies now, and we're starting to see them in the holiday rain. What's your thoughts on that? Do you like that? We'll chat more when we return right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Yes, it is. Why? Because I'm Dave Schrader filling in for Chad Hartman. And our guest on the line, Cameron Pasha, we're talking movies, entertainment, horror for the holidays. Cameron, are you for it or again it?
Well, I mean, I think horror is a year-round phenomenon. And, you know, and some people ask you, why did they release this Nosferatu at Christmas? I think it's actually not about Christmas time. It's about the fact that they really believe they're going to win Oscars for this movie, and I think they will. And, you know, Oscar is when you release them in December, is the movies like Wicked that you're aiming for, because Academy voters tend to vote in early part January, February, and so they remember the films most recently that they've done.
Ah, so that's the shenanigans behind it. That makes more sense to me. It's so strange, and it is a beautifully done movie, Nosferatu. I certainly recommend people go check it out, see for yourself. Understand, like I said, I felt maybe about 15 minutes too long, but I couldn't tell you what I should have removed to make it flow a little quicker. One, it sucked. Five, it's amazing. Where do you put this in your pantheon of scores?
I'm going to put this at a 4.9 because I'm going to give the original Nosferatu the 5.
All right. I like that. Now, this is the news that just came out. A provocative take that's sparking, I guess, a lot of buzz. Director Adam McKay recently suggested that the new movie Wicked Part 1 could face bans in the United States within the next 3 to 5 years. Why? Because McKay says the film tackles bold themes like propaganda, fascism, radicalization in ways that might not sit well in our increasingly polarized political climate. He called Wicked one of the most radical big studio films ever made, and with a cast that includes Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo, it's certainly getting a lot of attention. But McKay's comments raise bigger questions about how art and entertainment intersect with politics. So can movies like Wicked spark meaningful conversations about the world we live in, or are these concerns about censorship and backlash really the sign of our times, Cameron?
I have had some interactions with Mr. McKay because I work in Hollywood, right?
Right.
I will say this. I wouldn't take anything he says seriously. He's a man who likes to create drama online to get attention. His own ex-partner, Will Ferrell, who's one of the most liked people in Hollywood, is no longer speaking with him. So that kind of speaks for itself. This is a gentleman that I think is creating a controversy for his own ego, frankly. I'm being very frank about it. So I don't think there's – obviously, Wicked is not going to get banned. I mean, he's one of these people that's still thinking that the next 4 years of Hollywood, like 4 years after this election, we're going to turn into 1942 Germany. And people in Hollywood aren't saying this anymore. So he is he's in his own little world trying to create drama. So no, Wicked speaks for itself as an artistic achievement. We've always had films warning against propaganda. That's what filmmakers do.
Right.
I mean, they warn against government oppression. And whatever side of the political line you are on, generally, most people don't want government oppression. They may define what that oppression is a little differently, but they don't want it. And so filmmakers tend to critique it. Star Wars is about that. I mean, if you are right-wing, you can use Star Wars to critique, what you think are communist governments. If you are left-wing, you think the empire is a fascist government. The point is oppression is wrong, and Hollywood has always made movies about that. So I think we shouldn't take Mr. McKay very seriously on this.
All right. I was fascinated by the thought and the concept. But again, looking back at things, during COVID, a lot of us returned to watching and binging our favorite TV shows. And even things like 30 Rock, I was like, oh, my gosh. A brilliant show, clever, smart, fast, really racist in some moments. And you think, how are we okay with this joke 5 years ago? How are we okay with this slant on the story? And, you know, and I'm not even one that's easily offended. I know a lot of people say, well, of course not, because you're a white guy and you're not going to be offended by the jokes. But I get the humor and the sarcasm behind them. The pointed nature of what they're actually trying to say is more ironic than it is where they're going for the racist or bad joke element of it.
You don't have to be white to want controversial comedy to force people to think. I mean, Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock have been doing that for decades, right? And I will say this. I was recently at a dinner with several very successful screenwriters and TV showrunners. It was actually last week, a pre-Christmas dinner. And they were saying that the change in Hollywood that has happened is, frankly, since the election, it was building up to it, but since the election, they're actually getting directives from the studios to saying, I think we need to go back to the way things kind of were. I think the audiences wanted more complex storytelling. I think the audiences want more white men on screen. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's a very different narrative than we've had for a decade now. And I think that's a return to the center in Hollywood. That's what we're seeing.
Well, we are. We're seeing a lot of trial and error in TV. And again, mm-hmm. it's still a business, right? I mean, if you know that, hey, this sci-fi show is really slanted towards sci-fi fans, but as we're seeing, sci-fi fans are mostly in this kind of group and age and race and religion or belief. You accommodate for the fan base, and then you create other shows that might be more directed towards somebody else, right? I mean, that's just kind of the way the story needs to go. And
that's how business works.
Right. One of my favorite shows for sci-fi has been Doctor Who. They made this leap that they're going to change the main character to a woman. There was all this uprising. And I even got into a very bad fight with a friend of mine who was taking things so personally when I said, boy, I just hope they're not doing this for the wrong reason. Her response to me was, oh, did you worry about that when Matt Smith or David Tennant got the job? And I'm like, no, but I want them to be making a good series good, not just, oh, look, we're relevant. We've got a female lead. And the problem was they didn't write well for Jodie Whittaker. The show languished. It did not do well because they didn't know how to write properly. And that's what I think a big problem with Hollywood is that there are characters. Listen, Walking Dead had been a juggernaut, but its female characters were not written very well. They don't, you know, there's not an even keel for some of these people that you really should have. I think it shouldn't just be written for a woman. It should be a well-written character where it doesn't matter what sexuality, what race, what, gender they are. It just fits the character for who they are.
I mean, and again, this is nothing. The myopia of sort of maybe younger generations is lack of information about the past. This has always been the case in Hollywood. I mean, the strong female character. I mean, we've had Wonder Woman existed for decades, right? I mean, we had Emma Peel in the Avengers in the 60s as a and so in the 80s was the era of female power. You had Ripley in Aliens, right? You had Sarah Connor in Terminator, and no one was sitting thinking that they're trying to push female lead as a part of a political agenda, because they weren't. They're trying to tell good stories, and everyone embraced those characters. And I think what we're going to see now is a return to just good storytelling, at which point no one is going to care about the race or the ethnicity of the character, because they're going to be following the story. When the show, the movie is just about, here, look at the person we've cast, then you're not following the story there, right?
Right.
And so that's what pulls people out, right? And, so that it's like as if you did it cast Will Smith in Men in Black and say, look, we cast a black man in Men in Black. How about just making a movie about Men in Black, which is what they did, and that's how it was successful, right?
Exactly.
And that is what Hollywood is now returning to. So Mr. McKay's comments are really on the fringe in Hollywood at this time.
Cameron, it's always great catching up with you. I know we've got to talk again. Maybe I'll have you on soon on the Paranormal 360 here on WCCO.
Please.
And get some insights from you on that as well. Thank you very much. I hope you have a wonderful new year, and we'll be talking again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks so much. God bless, Dave.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good one. All right, we're going to take our break here. When we come back, we'll take a look at some weather, traffic, and we'll continue our conversations. I'd love for you to be a part of the show. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. Mega Millions equals mega chances. Are you buying? Are you in? We'll talk about that next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's right here on News Talk 830 WCCO.